This week is Parshat Vayeshev, and per popular request, we're doing something related to Hanukkah this week and certainly next week, which is chaval, because a lot of great stories in Vayeshev and in Miketz, but it is what it is. And Hanukkah always comes this time of year, and most years we actually ignore Hanukkah. This year we're going to pay attention to it. Before starting, I just want to mention a friend who was the matriarch of a very impressive family, a beautiful family, the Graber family from Memphis, Mrs. Evelyn Graber, Elka Zelda, Bat Yosef, who passed away just a couple days ago. The funeral was, I believe, on Sunday. She was really a neat lady. And we had the pleasure of spending many psachim with the Graber family, and they participated in our shiurim. And just want to mention her name and dedicate the shiur to her memory. We're all familiar with the central sugya of Chanukah. We've studied here in this form a number of times. And just one quick note, you'll notice that the central sugya of Chanukah appears in Masachet Shabbat. And that's because there is no Masachet Chanukah. And there's no Masachet Chanukah. There's a bunch of theories as to why there isn't a Masachet Chanukah. The most likely one was that the rabbis really weren't all that happy with the Chashmonaim. And the heroes of the Chanukah story turned out to be, or at least their father, descendants, their progeny turned out to be anti-rabbinates and brutal people, and in some cases more Greek than the Greeks. And so there was a lot of dissatisfaction with them, and that may be the reason that there was no Masachet Chanukah. One could make the argument that there's just not a whole lot to talk about, and therefore there was no Masachet Chanukah, but there's also other things that we have that are very small and take up very little room, and we found a way to pad the Mishnayot, like Masachet Bikurim and Masachet Moed Katan, to pad it with other material that's related, like Megillah and Rosh Hashanah, and so theoretically it could have fit in, or there could have been a parak dedicated to it in Tanit or Megillah or in Moed Katan, but there's actually no Mishnayot about Ner Chanukah at all. Chanukah is mentioned in the Mishnah only in the context of it being a date, like in the case of Bikurim, or in the context of Kriyat HaTorah, but not Ner Chanukah. And Ner Chanukah itself is mentioned only one time in the Mishnah, and that's in that very incidentally in the context of Nizkei Esh, of causing damage through fire, and if the fire started within Ner Chanukah. So there really isn't. But the editors of the Bavli, when they came to put all of the material that they had about Chanukah together, they put it in to the second chapter of Masachet Shabbat, because Masachet Shabbat, the second chapter, is focused on Ner Shabbat. So Ner Shabbat, Ner Chanukah, and that kind of connection led to it being put in here. But in any case, the central sugya is one we're looking at here. And it's one of those things like Ashrei that people are so familiar with, they don't realize how bizarre it is. Right? In the case of Ashrei, teaching Ashrei, by the way, is very difficult. It's difficult because everybody thinks they know it because they say it all the time. And you have to kind of break it down to show, I don't really understand what that means, and then you could teach it. Same thing with this sugya. It's so well known that we don't stop and think about how odd it is. And so I'm going to show you already in the first two paragraphs of what we have here, five things that are hugely weird. And then we'll try to deconstruct it and then reconstruct it and explain what's going on. Tanu Rabbanan. Now, Tanu Rabbanan always introduces a Braita, right? Which means the Braita is anchored in Eretz Yisrael from the times of the Tanaim. That's the impression we have. Mitzvat Chanukah ner ishu veto, which means the basic mitzvah of Chanukah is ner ishu veto. I don't want to use the word candle because that's misleading. A ner really is a cup, usually made of earthenware, sometimes of metal. Inside is some oil or other fuel and a wick. That's a ner. So we use the word ner. The mitzvah of Chanukah is ner ishu veto, one ner per household, which means that now, regardless of how many people you have in your household, you light one ner on the first night, and on the second night, you light one ner, and the whole week costs you, the whole holiday costs you eight nerot, or really one ner that you refill, eight nerot full of oil is what it costs you. V'ham mehadrin, and this is weird thing number one, which is we do not have anywhere else in our literature where it describes, here's how you do a mitzvah, and here's a better way to do the mitzvah. Most of that is kind of left up to the generic notion of Hidur Mitzvah, which involves spending more money to aesthetically beautify a mitzvah with a nicer lulav, more expensive etrog, etc. But here we're given specific direction of the group called the Mahadrin. This is what they would do. By the way, we're not told if you want to be Mahadir, here's how you do it, but rather this is what the Mahadrin do. What do they do? Ner l'chol achad v'achad, right? Which simply read means that I, the head of the household, light, instead of one, I light seven, because I have seven people in my family. So I light seven, right? That's the hidur. Not to light one per household, but one per person. And the second night, seven, the third night, seven, and the whole week costs you, essentially, the number of people in your household times eight. The ha-mehadrin, min ha-mehadrin. This is weird thing number three. That there's now, excuse me, there's now another deeper or more beautiful way to do the mitzvah. So we're not given just a choice of basic and mahadrin, which is unprecedented. We're given basic, mahadrin, and mahadrin, 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 which is even more unprecedented, if you could say such a thing. All right? And now what is it the mahadrin and mahadrin do? So this is weird thing number three. Is Beit Shammai Omerim Yom Rishon Nadlik Shmona Mikam Ve'elech Pochet Ve'olech Ve'elech Omerim Yom Rishon Nadlik Achad Mikam Ve'elech Posif Ve'olech. Everybody in the world knows this. Beit Shammai says you start with eight, go down to one. Beit Hillel says you start with one, go up to eight. Machloket Rishonim between the Ri and the Rambam and others about whether this means that you do Mahadrin and then on top of that Mahadrin and Mahadrin like the Rambam. So in the Rambam's famous example, if you have 10 people in the house, the first night you light 10, the second night you light 20, etc. They don't light, you light, and then the last night you light 80. Or like the Ri says, that it goes back to the basic, which is one per household, and the second night two for the household, and on the last night you have eight. That's an interesting machloket, which we're not going to be able to touch into right now. Now, weird thing number four. Amar Ula, pligi batrei amoroi b'marava. So Ula reports, coming from Eretz Yisrael, that in Eretz Yisrael, there's a machloket amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. And who are the amoraim? Rabbi Yossi bar Avid, Rabbi Yossi bar Zvida. All right, and notice what they have in common. What do they have in common?
Besides for their name?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it. They're both Yossi. Which leads to the following. Chad Amar, and then on the next line of Chad Amar, meaning Ula doesn't report what Yossi Bar Zvida said or Yossi Arvin said. He said one of them said and one of them said, because he doesn't remember which one said what, because they're both named Yossi. This, by the way, happens in other places where these two Amorai are quoted in the Bavli. We say Chad Amar v'Chad Amar, but we don't know which one said what, evidently because of the confusion of the names. Remember, it's all oral. All right. So Yossi number one said, Tama de Beit Shammai keneged emim ha-nichlasim, but Tama de Beit Hillel keneged emim ha-yotzin. That the reason Beit Shammai is saying that you go 8 to 1 is, now by the way, before we go further, this is weird thing number 5 or 4, which is that there's actually weird thing number 5, because let's go back a second. We have Mahadrin, which is strange. We had Mehadrin Min HaMehadrin, which is now doubly strange. We now have a Machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel about how to do Mehadrin Min HaMehadrin, which is trebly strange. And now the fourth thing, I take it back and forth, is we have a Machloket about Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. You think about how odd that is. Now, I'll go back to number three for a second. We're familiar with Machlokot Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. They are legion all over the place. Those machlokot are all about essential things in halacha. Is this a kosher sukkah or not? What order do you make the brachot in Kiddush Friday night? Right? Is this thing tameh or not? It's a binary question of the chatchila, do it this way or that. The diavad, are you yotze? Is it a shir? Whatever it might be. Here the machloket is about how to do the super duper, which is odd. And then fourth thing is, there's a machloket about their machloket, right? Which is Yossi versus Yossi. Yossi number one says, the Beit Shammai's position is, let me know how many days are yet to come. And Beit Hillel says, how many days have gone? Okay. V'chad amar, tamid Beit Shammai keneged parei achag, v'tamid Beit Hillel demalim b'kodesh vein moridim. The other one says, the machloket is essentially anchored in the behavior of the Beit HaMikdash. You have to remember that that in the Mikdash, generally, any time that we're involved in a sequence of things involved in Kiddushah, we always go up. That's Malim Bakodesh Fein Moridin. The famous exception to the rule, that almost proves the rule, is the diminishing sequence of bulls brought on Sukkot. On the first day, ring 13, the next day 12, etc., down to 7. And so you could ask, so what does Sukkot have to do with Hanukkah? The answer is it has everything to do with Hanukkah. In the first century BCE, Hanukkah was actually called Sukkot of Kislev. And if you look at Maccabees 2 in chapter 10, you'll see that in the letter that they wrote to the community in Alexandria, explaining them about what the story and trying to persuade them to adopt this holiday, the story that they tell is that we came into the Mikdash and we remembered our inability to celebrate Sukkot properly just 2 months earlier. And so we built the Mizbeach and we set up a holiday for 8 days and we took Lulav and Etrog and walked around the Mizbeach. All right, so Sukkot of Kislev, which of course is modeled after, evidently after Pesach Sheni, the idea that you have like a do-over a little bit later. And so taking one of the nuances of the Korbanot of Sukkot and applying it to Hanukkah is not so strange. All right, good. So we have, again, weird thing number four is we have this machloket between Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael to explain the super-duper way to do it and the machloket b'Shem Hillel about the super-duper. And our weird thing number five is here. Amar Rabba Bar Chanan Rav Yochanan, we have another report from Eretz Yisrael. Shnei's Kenim Ayu at Sidon. There were two scholars in the town of Sidon. Sidon is on the north coast of the Kinneret. Echad Asakim Eit Shammai v'Echad Asakim v'Evit Hillel, which is weird, because we're now talking of a report from Rabbi Yochanan. And we assume this is happening in Rabbi Yochanan's life. And that means that this is, Rabbi Yochanan died in the year 299. Rabbi Yochanan's life is after the Mishnah. And we certainly are accustomed to the idea that early on in the game, early on in the Tannaitic era, disputes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were settled, usually in favor of Beit Hillel. And from that point on, Beit Shammai was like the Mishnah it says in Ediot, ain't a Mishnah. Doesn't count. It's not an opinion. The Mishnah in Ediot even asks, why do we even mention Beit Shammai's opinion? So to let you know that there was such an opinion. But not because it's an act of halachic choice. So here we have two zakenim. One is doing 8 to 1. The other is doing 1 to 8. And then the Zenotain Tamid Rav can I get parachag, the Zenotain Tamid Rav, the Malin Bakodesh Fein Moridin. When asked, why do you go 8 to 1? He says, ooh, parachag. The other says, why do you go 1 to 8? Ooh, Malin Bakodesh. Which supports Yossi number 2 in his explanation. But you understand, we have lots of strange things going on here. All right. Well, I'm going to continue before we start trying to solve the weird things, because we're not going to leave today without or offering a solution. I don't want anybody to lose sleep or get confused lighting it in the Hanukkah candles. Okay, we should have it settled. So the next line in the Gemara is another braita. Tanu Rabbanan, Ner Chanukah mitzvah l'anicha al petach beito mibachutz. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to put it outside, right next to your doorway, outside. Mayad darba aliyah. Aliyah here doesn't mean a second story. Aliyah means if you live in a loft, which means you don't have a doorway. You go into somebody else's house and then go up a ladder to the loft. Then you put it in the window that faces the most public area. If it's times of danger, what do? You put it on your table and that's enough. Now, that's not so, the statement in itself is not so strange. It says there's an ideal place to put Ner Chanukah. But it should be outside next to your door. If you don't have a door, then there's another option. And then don't think that if you can't put it outside because it's dangerous, don't do it at all. Put it on your table and that's good enough. That's fine. But look at the next line and you'll see how strange it is. The next line, which we always understand to be a separate statement, but I don't think it is Amar Rava, Sarich Ner Acheret Lishtamesh La'orah. Rava says you need another ner if you want to use its light. Its light, by the way, in the singular. Now, what is Rava talking about? What we call a shamash. Right? In other words, if you want to read using Ner Chanukah or count money or play backgammon or whatever it might be, you need to have another ner there. We're all familiar with that law, and that's the shamash. V'i ika medura lo tzarich. But if there's a bonfire going, you don't need it. Now, let's stop and ask. Where do you have a menorah? It's not really a bonfire. It's like a fire in the fireplace. So where's the fireplace? Where's your fireplace? It's in your house. All right. So that means that Rava says you need another ner if you want to read by Ner Chanukah. Let's say read or whatever. And if there's a fire going in the fireplace, lo tzarich, you don't need it. Why? Why would you not need what?
Because there won't be any chashash that you're actually directly benefiting from the Chanukiah.
Because you have this big fire. It's like if you sit in a house with lights on, then you can read. Except the problem is, where's your Ner Chanukah supposed to be, according to what you said?
Outside.
Outside. So what does the menorah help? That's the problem.
Maybe it's
That's why.
directly following Menichah al Shulchan Ovadayo.
Good. So we're going to see. Good. So, but remember that that's only Bishat HaSakana, correct? So we have to put this together. The Rambam says what you're saying, and we're going to use that. And now it gets stranger. V'i Adam Chashuvu. If the guy we're talking about is an important person, a rich person, whatever it might be, Rashi points out he normally has his own personal light, even if there's a menorah. Picture the Harvard Club. I've never been there. Now picture the Harvard Club. You walk in, deep, dark wood paneling, low lights. Guy named Jeeves coming out and serving you a very fine bourbon, actually cognac probably, and everybody's got their own little lamp next to their spot. Even it may be well lit. There's a little lamp. It's your own private lamp. That's Adam Chashuv. I would picture that. I've never been to the Harvard Club. All right. So, Adam Chashuv. So even though there's a Madura going, you still need another there. So we have to clarify what's going on here. The Adam Chashuv part is kind of easy to understand because, like Pinchas said, if somebody sees the Adam Chashuv reading with the Ner Chanukah, even though there's a lot of light, they know this guy always has his own Ner. That Ner must be his own Ner and not Ner Chanukah. Okay. But we still have to clarify what the whole purpose of the Shamash here is. The lack, in fact, you don't need a Shamash if there's a Madura going, if the Ner Chanukah is supposed to be outside. Okay, next piece. And this is from later on in the Sugiyot of Chanukah. Is another difficulty we have. We go back to Ravuna. Ner she'yesh lo shnei piot. Let's say you have a ner. Remember, that's why I said a ner. Don't call it a candle. Call it a vessel that has an opening, and you fill it with oil and put the wick through the opening and light it. What if it has two openings? Oleh l'shnei b'nei adam. It counts for two people. Meaning, we're going to what we'll call the mahadrin, and there's two people in the house. You could use one thing with one thing of oil and two wicks, and that's okay. Amar Rava, milei kel rashemen v'kifah p'tilot. So let's say you take a bowl, fill it with oil, and put a bunch of wicks in it. Kafal lehakli. If you then cover it with, let's say, a strainer, so that each hole has a wick coming out. Olela kamen adam. It counts for a bunch of people. How many people you have? You got 10 wicks. That's 10 people. Lo kafal lehakli asa kamin v'dura. If you don't, then you got it as a bonfire. You don't have separate flames. You have one big flame. I feel a chad nami and all that doesn't even count for one because a menorah is not near Chanukah. Okay, fine. But here's the question. How come both Rav Huna and Rava identified the possibility of multiple Neirot in one Ner as counting for multiple people? And how come neither one of them suggested that'll work on the second night? How come Rav Huna didn't say, if you have a Ner with Shtei Piyot, you could use it on the second night according to Beit Hillel or on the seventh night according to Beit Shammai if you want to do that? That doesn't even come up. They don't even mention that as a possibility. So what I'd like
Well,
to
why should
do,
they? I
what?
mean, why should he mention that? I mean,
Because if his whole point is to say that when you have two separate openings, then they count as separate neirot, the easiest thing to say would be that will count on your second night because you have now two neirot. And Rava could easily say, what you could do on the sixth night is fill a bowl with oil. And cover it with a kli that has six holes and stick six wicks out and you're set. But that doesn't even come up. All they talk about is B'nai Adam. So
I thought the reason why is that's pshita. There's the fact that one person can take one kli and divide it up and make it into separate candles. That's not a chiddush. The chiddush is that two different people can use the same kli, and that can be, and they can both be
I disagree. I don't think that's what he's saying. Olelakam of Adam means I, as the head of the household, I have two people in my house. I can light for both of them with that. In other words, if you look at the Rambam, you'll see the way the Rambam reads Mahadrin. Mahadrin does not mean that each person lights a nair. Mahadrin means that the head of the household lights a nair on behalf of each person, or counting each person. And so what Rav Huna is saying is that if I have two people in the house, or Rav is saying, if I have 10 people in the house, I can fill a bowl with oil, take a kli and pop 10 holes in it, pop 10 wicks in it, and I can cover all 10 of them. But there's no mention about the fact that you have multiple candles, multiple Neirot on different nights. All right, so let's take a look, because we've already identified in the opening sugya at least five things that are pretty strange. And I think you all agree that they're pretty strange. The whole mention of the Mahadrin here, the fact there's a Machloket in Mahadrin, and a Mahadrin, etc. It's all very strange. And the fact that the Machloket in Eretz Yisrael is about the Machloket Ben Yael and Shammai just makes the whole issue even more difficult to understand. So I'd like to suggest, and this is based really on the work of Professor Shama Friedman, that what we have here in this apparent write-up is really a hybrid of two different traditions. Let's start with this. If you take a look, and this is not only in the sugyot that you have here, and all the sugyot that you find, which are almost all of them Bavli, there's very little mention of any practice in Eretz Yisrael when it comes to Chanukah. And by the way, if you look in the Yerushalmi, it's very hard to find anything about Chanukah in the Yerushalmi. So mention here and there, none of this, the details of how to light. If you take a look through all the sugyot, it seems to be pretty clear that in the Bavli, the Babylonian tradition was to light one candle. And so let's take a look here. As an example, Rava therefore says, "Tzarich ner acheret lishtamesh le'ora," meaning there's only one ner, and that's why le'ora in the singular. And therefore, you need a second one if you want to read by that ner, because of the problem of people recognizing what it's for, or the kedusha, whatever it might be, for whatever reason. Right? Now, given that as a premise, I'd like us to take a look at our Braita with a slightly different take. Here, I've reproduced the Braita and the discussion around it, but I have color-coded it, and I don't mean nothing political with these colors. I just want them to be stark differences. Should have probably used green, but green and red this in December is always a mess. So I use blue and red. Right? If this was November, I would have used green, because blue and red in November is always a mess. Right? The Braita that we're looking at, I believe, is a hybrid between two Mesorot, the Mesorah of Eretz Yisrael and the Mesorah of Bavel. And so I'm going to read right now what I think is the Mesorah from Eretz Yisrael. Chanukah, and by the way, in all of the Eretz Yisrael literature, Chanukah, the word Chanukah refers to the Ner, and it's not called Ner Chanukah, it's called Chanukah. Right? And it's also dealt with, by the way, in the feminine, as we'll see. Chanukah, Beit Shammai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmoneh Mikon Va'elach Pochet Volech. In other words, Beit Shammai says, the way to do Ner Chanukah is you start with 8 and go down. This is not Mahadrin Menahadrin. This is not anything special. This is the way to do it. Wait, Hill Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Achat Mikon Va'elach Mosef Volech. Now, if we accept that premise, and I'll demonstrate and I'll support it in a minute, if we accept that premise, that when you look at the blue, and here it's a little clear. If you accept the blue as being the core tradition of Eretz Yisrael, suddenly three of the weirdnesses go away in one shot. I have to demonstrate that it's true. Weirdness number one is the whole notion of Mahadrin and Mahadrin. It doesn't exist. Second of all, Beit Shammai Hillel having a disagreement about Mahadrin and Mahadrin doesn't exist. They're disagreeing about how to do the mitzvah on its essential level. And third thing is the notion that there's a machloket about the machloket Beit Shammai Hillel is not, we're not strange anymore at all. Because the machloket's not about mehadrin mehadrin. The machloket's about the essential way to do the mitzvah. Beit Shammai says the way you have to do the mitzvah is have 8 neirot on the first night. By the way, 8 neirot for the household, not per person. 8 neirot for the household outside by your door on the first night. Second night, 7, etc. And Beit Hillel says, first night you got to have 1 and then 2, and that's how you have to do the mitzvah. And then there's a machloket amoraim about what their reasoning is. Now, by the way, let me point out right away the difficulty that the Ri points out, which now goes away. The difficulty that the Ri points out is as follows. If you argue that the reason for having either 1 to 8 or 8 to 1, what we do, 1 to 8, is to notify people about what day it is, either counting up or counting down, then you have the following problem. If you do mahadrin min mahadrin, let's say I have 4 people in my house. So according to that, Beit Hillel, third night I'm going to have 12 neirot, right? Somebody sees 12 neirot, what do they know? They don't know what night it is. It could be one, the first night there's 12 people. Could be the sixth night there's 2 people. Could be the second night there's 6 people. Third, fourth, 12 is the best number to play with because you have all the possibilities, right? So therefore, the Ri says that mahadrin min mahadrin means there's still one, now you go back to 1 per household, and second night 2 per household, and that way people know what night it is. That's a very famous sheet of the Ri that ended up getting adopted by the Tor and the Shulchan Aruch. That's the way that the Sephardim, and the Rambam mentions, that's what everybody in the Sephardi world does, even though he disagreed. Which means that now we understand Beit Shammai Beit Hillel in the way that in Eretz Yisrael Hanukkah was commemorated was to have 1 per household, and then 2 per household, then 3 per household, or 8 per household, then 7, etc. And that's all you had. You had out there 1, and that's the essential mitzvah. The essential mitzvah was to put it outside and to broadcast how long this holiday is or what day it is. All right? Now, in the meantime, what's happening in Bavel? And by the way, you will notice that the whole issue of a shamash is a Bavli issue. It's a Babylonian issue. It starts with Rava. We don't hear any mention in the literature of Eretz Yisrael about a shamash, right? But we're going to go further than that. Let's see what the tradition was in Bavel. In Bavel, it was mitzvat Chanukah. That's how it's referred to, either mitzvat Chanukah or ner Chanukah. Mitzvat Chanukah, that's the Babylonian tradition, ner ishu beito. Meaning, what's the mitzvah? 1 ner. Beham mehadrin, people who want to beautify it, what do? Ner l'chol echad ve'echad. That's what they do. You want to beautify the mitzvah, what do? You have 1 per person. But there's no such thing as changing the amount of neirot per night. That's what's going on in Bavel always, which is why you have the following. Rav Huna in Bavel says, if you have a bowl with oil and you pop a cover on it, it can count for, he says, if it has 2 openings, Rav Huna, it'll count for 2 people. There's no such thing as second night because second night and first night aren't any different in Bavel. And Rava says, in Bavel, if you have a bowl and you fill it with oil and pop it over, and you got 10 wicks, it counts for 10 people. There's no such thing as 5 people on the second night. Because in Bavel, the first night and the second night and third night are not differentiated. They're not done differently. But we're going to add to that yet another component. Where did they light in Eretz Yisrael? The answer is quite clear. Chanukah, mitzvah lahanicha, al petach beito mibachutz. In all the Eretz Yisrael literature, Chanukah is always dealt with as a feminine, and if the word Chanukah is modifying. So this bright is definitely Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah lahanicha al petach beito mibachutz. The mitzvah is to put it outside, and if you don't have a door, you put it in the window. That's it. The window that's closest to the Rishut Rabim. Uveshata sakana. What's shata sakana? So something that's absolutely wild is if you look at Rashi. Rashi here on Shata Sakana says that the Persians had a law on their holiday. He's talking about the Zoroastrians. They had a fire festival in the winter. And on their festival, they had a rule. And by the way, it's critical to note that with the rise of the Sasanians in the middle of the third century, during the era of Shmuel, the Sasanians, Shavur Malka, famous, empowered the Zoroastrian priests and gave them the ability to go around and sort of, it's kind of a little bit kind of like what we see happening these days in Iran, where they go and police people about how they're supposed to dress, etc. They had a lot more power to police. And therefore, they had the power to come, and if you had any fire going that they could see, they'd come and trash your house. There's a sugya in Shabbat on Daf Mem Zayin where Rav was asked about moving a lit nair on Shabbat if the Zoroastrians were coming because of the danger involved. Rashi says Ubishata Sakana, and he points immediately to the Persian priests who had the ability to trash your house, and therefore it was dangerous. Why is Rashi saying that? A Braita should be composed in Eretz Yisrael. A Braita is composed at the time of the Tanaim. This is both out of place and out of time to say Bishata Sakana is the Sasanian era Zoroastrian priests. El Rashi recognizes that this line is not part of the Braita. But Bishata Sakana is part of a different reality. And what would they do in Bavel? Minicha al Shulchano v'dayo. And like Pinchas pointed out, so how does Rava follow that up? In that case, if it's in your house, you need Ner Acheret. If it's in your house, you need Ner Acheret, which means if your Ner is outside, like it should be, you don't need Ner Acheret because you're not reading. You're not using it. But if you're in the house and you want to cook, you want to read, you want to do your books, whatever it is, you need a Ner Acheret. And that's why if there's a Midurah going in the house, you don't need it. But to make sure that everybody will recognize that nair that's lit, because think about this, if you walk in a house and you see a beautiful fire going in the fireplace, or in our day, a well-lit room, and there's a nair on the table, you know the nair is not for use, it's for something else. But if this guy is somebody who always has his own private nair, then you need a nair acheret, because people will think that nair is not for Hanukkah, it's for his own private use. And so what we have here is essentially a hybrid that happens in the 5th or 6th century when the Gemara is being edited between the traditions of Eretz Yisrael, which involved one ner per household, either increasing or decreasing every day, either starting with 8 going down to 1 or 1 up to 8. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreeing about it. For whatever reason, this disagreement, and to get into this would take beyond what we have time for today, but this disagreement was allowed to continue well past the Tanaitic era, so that even in Sidon in the third century, people were doing different ways and nobody was bothered by that difference in practice. And the tradition in Bavel was always to have one, typically to light it indoors, and therefore you need a shamash, and therefore if you have multiple wicks coming out, it'll count for multiple people, but not for multiple nights, because the night doesn't matter in Bavel. It's one per night. And then if you're Mahadrin, one per person each night, and that's it. And thus, what you end up having is this hybrid Braita, looks like a Braita, that's really these different traditions thrown in together. And so hopefully this helps explain some of the strange things going on. And what Pinchas pointed out, I think here, which is in line with what I'm saying, is substantiated by the Rambam. Look at the Rambam. We'll end with this. The Rambam says at the end, in the fourth chapter of Megillah of Chanukah, Ner Chanukah mitzvah l'nichao al petach beitom b'chutz. Now this, of course, after the hybridization and bring all the traditions together, the mitzvah is to put it on the outside. But tefach ha-samuch l'petach, right next to the door, al small l'nichas l'bayit, on the left side, the Gemara says you have Ner Chanukah on one side and mezuzah on the other side. If you're in a loft, the Gemara says Ner Chanukah, if it's too high, then it's not seen, like sukkah, like mavui, etc. Okay, notice that's one halakha, and what does he leave out of that halakha? He leaves out shata sakana. He leaves out times of danger. And then he says, "Bimea sakana." In a separate halacha, watch this. Meniach ner Chanukah betoch beitom mifim. You can put the ner Chanukah on your in your house. Even on your own kitchen table. Your own table is enough. And by the way, there's Pesum and Nisa, like Tosot said, for the people in the house. Where does he put Shamash? Only there. Notice, the Rambam says, ideally, put Ner Chanukah outside. And if you're living aloft, then don't put it too high. And he doesn't mention the Shamash. Where does he mention the Shamash? When there's times of danger and you're lighting Ner Chanukah indoors, then sarich liot b'tochabayit ner acher lishtameish torah. And by the way, he doesn't say if you want to use the light. He says you need an ner acher. Why? Because typically if there's light there, it's in your house. Maitasha medura inot sarich ner acher. But if it's already a well-lit room, the fire is going in the fireplace, you don't need ner acher. Tam chashuvu shein darko lishtameish medura sarich ner acher. But if you're an important person who doesn't use the light of medura, you always have your own private torch, then you need an ner acher. Notice how the Rambam divides it, and where he puts the Shamash. He must read the sugya the way we read the sugya. That's what I'm going to claim. Is he reads the sugya of here, Amar Rava is being a continuation and a comment on this. Bishata sakana, you put it indoors, and in that case, you need another nair in order to be able to use the light. And in Pinchas, you caught that right away, that these two things are tied together. So hopefully what we've done over the past 35 minutes is to take a look at this very well-known central sugya of Chanukah, ask a series of questions about it, and then reorient ourselves to what we're actually looking at, which hopefully resolves the questions and explains a whole bunch of other sugyot in Chanukah. The final result, of course, was that the two traditions got, shall we say, hybridized into one, and that's, of course, our practice till today.